Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Love is not one size fits all. Yet often people assume that all healthy or serious intimate relationships must follow the same trajectory. As a result, there are strong social conventions for intimate relationships, such as monogamy, living together until death do you part, etc. These days, however, like never before, there are plenty of other options. If you want to explore a different way of loving, it's not always clear, though, what those options are or where those paths might lead. Our guest today on Pathways has written a book to help solve this problem. Our guest is Amy Guerin, author of the book, Stepping Off the Relationship Escalator, Uncommon Love and Life. Amy is a journalist, editor, and writer who has lived in Boulder, Colorado for over two decades. Her journalism has appeared in CNN.com, Entrepreneur.com, and many other venues. In her personal life, Amy has engaged in unconventional relationships since 2001. In 2012, she launched the blog SoloPoly.net using the pen name Aggie Says. Hello, Amy, and welcome to the Pathways program.
Hi, Paul. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, well, let's start with the relationship escalator story, which is what the book is really a reflection on. And how does that story go?
Well, let's see. The relationship escalator is a term that I first started hearing in the Bay Area around 2011. I was living there for a little while, where people were referring to the bundle of customs that define the way most of the time we think relationships are, quote unquote, supposed to work. And a lot of times that's the way that people assume is the only right or healthy way to have any kind of relationship that involves a significant level of intimacy. And so it's not just about loving somebody. There's a lot of presumptions about behaving as a couple, living together, being exclusive, especially in terms of sex and romance, valuing that relationship and above almost every other relationship or commitment, and always and forever to death do you part. There's a whole lot of fine print that goes along with I love you. And once people start to get emotionally involved or be in a relationship, they often try to decide as soon as possible, is this heading up the escalator? How far up is it going to go? And there's a lot of that can be great if the escalator is what you want, but it can also put a lot of pressure on relationships and create a lot of tension. And for some people, things that really define the escalator just don't work for them at all. Well, it's a good thing we've got options. And when I did a survey in 2013 that was basically asked people, are your relationships unconventional? And if so, how? I thought I would get like 100 responses. I ended up getting 1,500, and people were writing essays. I was just floored by the response that I got. And so this ended up turning into a much larger project. The book I put out is the first of at least three. And people had so much to say. I was just floored by that. But there are all sorts of ways that people's relationships diverge from those escalator style norms. And I learned a lot from it.
Now, I think why is it that people have such a hard time realizing that they have so many options? Because people often think, well, if they're not making the escalator work, as you define it, you know, this one-way continuous trip towards happily ever after, you know, with continuity and permanence, and if they don't make that work, or if they don't realize they have options, they think simply that there's something must be wrong with them.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. If you're not doing love right, what's wrong with you? It comes back to that for many people. So what I prefer to do with that is to just consider that there are all sorts of social norms out there. And the reason why they're norms is that you don't have to think about stuff, so that you can just move ahead and interact with things. And it takes a lot of the uncertainty out of how you're supposed to act, what you're supposed to do. Like, for instance, if you walk into a room and you said hello, you know, well, that would make it awkward, and you'd have to really kind of think very hard about how you'd interact with people. Well, we have norms about relationships for the same way, to take a lot of the awkwardness out of it. And that's not a problem, but the thing is, when the norms become powerful enough that they start to constrain how people think about relationships, and even more importantly, it makes even thinking or talking about other possible ways of doing relationships to be a kind of taboo. For instance, say you've been married for a long time, and it was a traditional escalator relationship, and then you mentioned to your partner, hey, you know what? I heard about this stuff called polyamory or swinging, or I think I might want to live somewhere else for a little while. I think maybe I don't want us to live together for a little while. Well, that's like, oh my God, end of the relationship. And then what's wrong with you? And it just blows everything up. That's because there was so much stigma associated with diverging from the escalator.
Now, I love the way that you point out the only way you can be sure, absolutely sure, you've succeeded on the escalator is when neither one of you has sex with anyone else, and then one of you dies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anything less than that is considered the relationship has failed.
That doesn't necessarily mean the relationship has been healthy or happy. I mean, I've known people, and I'm sure you've known people, who have been married and completely monogamous for decades, and they hate each other, and they make everyone around them miserable. But is that a success just because they stay together?
Right. No, that's a really good point. You know, this all or nothing and forever thing is a couple of the hallmarks of the relationship escalator. How long has pursuing the escalator solution been such a strong social imperative?
Oof, wow. That's a good question. There's a sociologist named Stephanie Kuntz who has done a fair amount of research into that. And the name of her book is, I think it's Marriage, a History, but if you look for Stephanie Kuntz, you'll find it. But I mean, marriage itself has meant a lot of things ever since the institution existed. I mean, it came back from, you know, being a property exchange or a way to combine wealth and land holdings. But then it had all these religious overtones to it, and then it came down to controlling sexuality, and it's got really messy, tangled roots. That doesn't make it bad. Lots of things have really messy, tangled roots in our society. But what it has come to mean over the last century or so is a partnership not just for logistical support and social identity, and indicating social status and creating a framework for a family and specifically for raising children. But it's also increasingly come to mean a sense of emotional fulfillment, a sense of support and connection that goes beyond things like having kids or who you're going to leave your estate to.
Now, it's obvious to me, having read the book, although it might not be obvious from anyone who sees the title of the book, that you're not really against traditional relationships, are you?
No, they're great. They work. I hear monogamy works really well for some people. No, actually, I just plagiarized a quote. That's what somebody told me in a survey. Traditional relationships can work great. I think that the problem gets to be when people do that just because they think that's what they're supposed to do, to be a real adult, that if you want any love at all in your life, that it has to look this way. And that has a lot of ripple effects. For instance, it leads people often to undervalue their friendships.
Right. I think that's a big cost of it. How many times have we found that a friend of ours got into a, quote, serious relationship, and all of a sudden they become very unavailable?
Yeah, they become very unavailable. And there's this kind of cocooning effect that happens. And some of that is because of all the brain chemistry when you first fall in love. If you're the kind of person who falls in love, I mean, some people are aromantic, and that doesn't mean that they don't love, but they just don't get that brain chemical soup going. And but what happens is the escalator kind of encourages people to let their other connections atrophy in a way.
Yeah, so a hierarchy is imposed.
Yeah, yeah, and that has a lot of ripple effects. So this is why a lot of times when somebody's escalator relationship ends, they need to jump back on the escalator right away. Find somebody else and jump back on right away, because you know what? They don't have the support network that they used to have.
That is so interesting.
Yeah. And
now, okay, you're not against traditional relationships, but this is a book about other options. Why might someone who prefers traditional relationships want to read your book?
Oh, God, because you can pick up some really killer skills from people who have chosen uncommon routes to love. This has saved me in many respects. But, you know, when we were talking about that cocooning effect, I was married for a while, and I love my former spouse dearly, and we have such a better relationship since we got unmarried. but the cocooning effect it kind of leads people to equate having an escalator relationship with security. When I finally realized back around 2001 that monogamy really never suited me, and my spouse at the time and I decided, okay, well, we're not going to do this monogamy thing, and we became polyamorous and started getting involved with other people, I developed a lot of connections that once he and I decided that we needed to get unmarried, just because it was not the best fit for us, it wasn't good for our relationship, I had a whole lot of support there. It was amazing the level of support that I had, and not from just the poly community, but it had led me to really start taking my friendship seriously to a level that, I mean, I'd always taken my friends seriously, but just above and beyond. So that is something that I've had a lot of friends who are very dedicated to the escalator that they don't get that. And if their relationship ends, if they end up widowed or divorced or whatever, they're bereft and adrift in a way that I was not.
Now, I'd like to elucidate some of the terms here, because your book is not about one alternative or another. It's not basically espousing any alternative. It's just saying there are alternatives, and it's a pretty nice survey of the various different forms that can take. But the word polyamorous, I think these days, it actually puts a lot of people off, because they equate it with promiscuous or polysexual, and it can just be anywhere on the gamut from monogamous or slightly open, you know, or opening a relationship, to the solo poly form that you identify with, or even to relationship anarchy. So is that true? Have I got that right?
Well, there's the umbrella of that. Okay, so basically by talking to all these people with getting the surveys in, it helped me identify five main hallmarks of escalator relationships. Monogamy is only one of them, but it is the 800-pound gorilla. That's what really gets a lot.
What are the other ones?
So the other ones are, hang on a second, let me get my list. Okay, yeah, so the big one, besides monogamy, that has the most effects is merging. So that's more than just living together. That's when people start to think and act as a couple. They merge their individual identities to a large extent. Then there's hierarchy, and that has to do with valuing your escalator relationship above and beyond almost any other adult relationship you have. Including lifelong friends, and including, to some extent, siblings or parents, unless you have care-based responsibilities to immediate family members by blood or marriage. That's pretty much the only, ordinarily allowable exception to valuing it. Like if you were to go to a wedding and your plus one is your best friend, people are going to ask you questions, and you're probably going to feel like you need to explain that. Whereas if you bring your spouse, well, that's what you're supposed to do, right?
Right.
So besides that, something that was a big surprise from doing the survey was the presumption of having a sexual and romantic connection, at least at some point. We all know long-term relationships, sometimes the sex and romance fades off, but we all expect that they were all getting it on at some point, right?
Right.
And where does that leave people who consider themselves asexual or aromantic? Do their relationships not count? Not from what they told me. And then the other one is continuity and consistency, that it's supposed to be a one-way trip, always and forever, once you reach the pinnacle of getting married and living together and all that, establishing that sort of relationship. You're supposed to stay like that until somebody dies. But what about relationships that where people may come in and out of your life over time, and your lovers when you're together, or sometimes it may shift between being lovers and partners and friends. Do these things not count? Again, according to my survey, they count to the people who have them. These are incredibly valuable relationships.
Now, you say in the book that you've witnessed the pain that can result when people ride escalator, mostly because they think it's the only way to love or be loved. So let's talk about the harm caused by the stigma against unconventional relationships.
Okay. The stigma is something that's associated, it's the flip side of privilege, and there's lots of kinds of privilege in society. There's white privilege, there's male privilege, there is education privilege, there is wealth privilege. It's not always about things that are innate, inborn traits. It can be associated to things that you have worked to acquire in your life. What happens with stigma is two things. You don't get all the extra advantages that whatever the privileged group gets. And in this society, couple privilege is a big thing. People who are coupled up, set aside all the legal and financial benefits and social recognition that you get. There's also things like the housing stock is designed to support, people who are coupled up. And lots of other things like that. Stigma there's overt things out in the world that make it hard to interact with people and to get the same access and opportunities to be viewed as valid and credible, to not be treated with suspicion. But then there's also the stigma that's in your head, and that's really hard to undo, because even if you consciously disagree with norms that privilege certain types of people or activities or whatever, even if you want to get away from that in your head and you're trying to get away from that in your life and in your relationships, sometimes you can still have these reflexes. And that's something that some people have called the monogamy hangover. And this is what makes it challenging, because we all grew up marinating in these escalator norms. It's every fairy tale ever. It's every romantic, comedy ever is all about, and they lived happily ever after because they, had this romance and moved in together and got married, and that's how it works, right? If you're doing something different, it's very hard emotionally to shake the feeling that you're doing it wrong.
Right.
That leads to a lot of self-doubt. Now, if you couple that with also the fact that you're trying to do something that's stigmatized and the world is basically, on the other side and telling you, hey, you are doing this wrong, it's really hard to believe in yourself. And plus, if you feel isolated, if you feel like you're the only person who's doing this and other people, are not doing it, if you don't have any sense of community, if you don't have any role models, if you're not seeing it in the media around you, if nobody else is talking about doing stuff like this, wow, that's going to make you feel pretty insecure about it, too.
Right. It's hard. So how do you counter the argument that non-monogamy is really all about fear of commitment?
Have you talked to poly people? I mean... Really?
Maybe a lot of our listeners have not, and so you can share with us.
No, I'm laughing about that, because the joke in polyamory is that, first of all, the mantra in polyamory is communicate, communicate, communicate. And that's because, since we can't make assumptions about how our relationship, because polyamory can look a lot of different ways. I mean, it can be everything from me, a solo poly person. I prefer not to live with partners. I have multiple partners. My relationships can get pretty deep and last pretty long, but we're not shacking up. I'm just not the best person I can be in that circumstance. Well, if if they hear that I'm solo poly, then there's this dichotomy like, well, then you don't have serious relationships, right? Because right. they're not going to go all the way up that escalator. Oh, I beg to differ. But the communicate thing is that poly people have to discuss all the basics of where am I at now? What do I feel like I can offer? What do I want? How could this work? And, you know, we have a lot of room to kind of, you know, experiment with how that works. That's a really a powerful and freeing thing to have. It just... it freaks people out because they don't. They have these two boxes. You have serious and you have casual relationships. Where do you fit? And casual is stigmatized because, let's face it, we live in a society that stigmatizes sex. A lot of people consider it sex negative. I actually think it's sex polarized because we're all obsessed with it. And it's everywhere and it's used to sell everything. But it's also supposed to be bad, evil, dangerous, and shameful. You know, and there's a lot of tension around sex. So, and especially for women, you know, if you admit that you're interested in sex at all, well, you know, you're promiscuous. If people talk to poly people for 5 minutes, they'll realize the joke is, yeah, when are we going to get done with all this talking and start actually having sex?
That's hilarious. I know on the Poly Weekly blog, which is where I first heard you talk. Their slogan is, and the very last thing they say at the end of every show, and it's not all about the sex.
That's a great podcast. Cunning Minx does an excellent job with that.
Yeah, you were really good on it. And I like the way that you're breaking down these prejudices that we have in our society that in contradistinction to couple privilege. Like singleism is a word that you use, and that's the stigma associated with adults who are unpartnered. And then, of course, the other one is the stigma associated with consensual non-monogamy. And you
there's an excellent book by a psychologist, Bella DiPaolo, called Singled Out, which is all about singleism. And she's the one who really coined that term. I recommend everybody read that because a lot of times people don't realize how they are contributing to marginalizing people who aren't conventionally partnered.
You know, it's amazing in this era of all of this talk about freedom and the home of the free and the land of the brave and everything. It's like the last thing the conservatives want is personal freedom, having to do with relationship forms or reproductive rights. It's just amazing.
Not necessarily. If you walked into a swinger party or a club, you would probably find a lot of very politically conservative people.
Wow.
And people who are socially conservative in a lot of ways. Because the thing that distinguishes swinging is that most, and I'm painting this with a broad brush, this doesn't apply to absolutely all swingers, but most swingers view it as a couple-centric activity. It's something that primarily couples do, and it's a recreational activity. So they have recreational sex with other people, which is fine, and it works for them, and it's very rule-based, and they've got a culture that works very well for them on that. But a lot of them are extremely politically conservative.
You know, one of the interesting chapters in the book is on relationship anarchy, total do-it-yourself love. Mm-hmm. So for the sake of our audience, please explain, what does relationship anarchy mean?
Okay, so it's more a philosophy than a relationship style. It's the idea that you custom make, explicitly make every part of how a relationship is going to work, whether it's a friendship, whether it's a romantic relationship, whether it's a co-parenting relationship. You negotiate all that stuff, every piece of it. So it is possible. A lot of people think, well, you must be non-monogamous. No, it is possible to arrive at a relationship that has all the bearings of a conventional relationship where they're monogamous, where they live together, where they're married, and they intend for it to be lifelong. Only the process with how they got there is different from, they just didn't do this because they think it's what you're supposed to do and this is what you do next.
Right. You write that everyone owes a profound debt to the many queer people who bravely stuck their necks out for the right to live and love as they choose.
Yeah, a lot of pioneering things in relationship structure came out of the queer community because their relationships were already so marginalized and so not the norm, and they were looking for love and support wherever they could find it. They were under attack, and they still are.
Right.
Legal marriage has not changed that.
Well, I think we owe something of a debt to you now for writing this very engaging and informative book. And I wish we had a lot more time to talk about it, but we're just about running out.
Thank my 1,500 co-authors.
Yeah, well, it was a very interesting survey, and I know you're going to keep doing more of that. I think really the lesson in this whole book is that you don't have to judge anyone's relationships as right or wrong, as you put it in the book. You don't have to agree with what they're doing, and you don't have to change what you're doing, but it's good to have this broader understanding.
Yeah, and it helps people, whether or not they want to step off the escalator, you can pick up some useful skills by learning it, and also you can help not further marginalize people. We hurt each other every day by marginalizing them unintentionally.
Okay, so let's talk about your book and how people can find it. I know you've got two more books planned on this topic, right?
Yes, I do. So the second book is already written. It's coming out later this year, and it's answers to 10 common questions about unconventional relationships, like what about the children, you know, all that. And spoiler, the children are just fine. And then after that is the third book next year. It's going to be about stigma, the closet, and how people can make the world a safer place for all kinds of relationships.
Well, I'm so glad that you're doing this. And there's so much more we could explore right now about your first book, but we have run out of time. So let's be sure to tell our listeners about your website and how they can get the book.
Thank you. Yeah, you can go to offescalator.com, and that's all one word, and that's where you can find out all the ways to buy the book. You can buy it through Amazon as a print book or as a Kindle ebook, but you can also buy it directly from me through my website, and if you do that, I can give you a discount. So for listeners of Pathways, there's a discount that's just use the code Pathways when you check out, and you'll get 10% off, and you'll get a signed copy from me, which is way cool.
That is very kind of you, very generous. Thank you very much. So that's at www.offescalator.com. And if you want to buy the book, you can use a discount code Pathways and get a 10% discount.
That's correct. And I also have a Facebook page, Off Escalator. If you search Facebook for Off Escalator, you'll find it as well.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Amy. It's been a lot of fun talking with you today.
Thanks, Paul. I enjoyed it.
And for those who tuned in late, this is your Pathways host, Paul O'Brien, author of Great Decisions, Perfect Timing, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview anytime you like, via the internet or as a free podcast. Just search for Pathways or Paul O'Brien, and you will find it on iTunes or Android servers. Today we have been visiting with Amy Guerin, author of Stepping Off the Relationship Escalator, Uncommon Love and Life. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to the Pathways program, which is broadcast and streamed worldwide via KBOO.FM Sunday mornings at 8:30 a.m. USA Pacific Time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. And thanks again to Amy Guerin and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways experience.